Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintos.
This is the Donalana Kitchen. We get together here live on the radio every Tuesday at KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa, and we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
So, thanks to our supporters, thanks to you, our listeners. We cannot do it without you. This is community radio, and that's just what it says. We're put together by volunteers in the community, and we make our programming accessible and hopefully enjoyable to all of you out there. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions on the Donalana Kitchen.
We're pretty opinionated.
We do.
So
just bear with us, folks. So stick around for the next hour for lots of good stuff. So here it is. It's fall already, and we find ourselves asking again, where did summer go? Oh, my goodness. Farmers are busy dealing with the weather and the harvest here in Iowa. Very wet lately. Very wet. Farmer markets are offering fall things. Pumpkins, potatoes, black walnuts even. I found that there was a vendor that had a black walnut pie slices for sale.
That's right up my alley. Chestnuts, winter squash,
yeah. Apples. Oh, my goodness.
Squash.
It's a good time of year to eat. Yes. Today, we'll consider the hard work and the fall bounty of one of our favorite local orchards. And Donna will talk about biscotti. And I have a reading to share. People often write nice things about farming and food, and there's just something I want to share. So
yeah, you were kind of interested in those topics.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah,
we do that. That's good. Joining us here at the kitchen table today is Judy Henry.
Oh, yes. Judy has the Berry Patch Farm. And I have to say, if you guys have never been out there, it is a beautiful, beautiful spot. Judy, did you buy that land and plant all those trees?
We did, about 50 years ago.
Which means that it's a mature orchard and it is gorgeous. It's south of Nevada and it's kind of on this gently rolling land that is just, I got to say, it is picturesque. It really, really, it's a beautiful place. It's a U-pick. Take your kids. Make sure they know that apples come from trees and berries come from bushes. And Judy used to be a preschool teacher and had a preschool out there for many years. So it's very child-friendly, very family-friendly. And do you guys still do hay rides and stuff like that?
We do on Saturdays, and that seems to be a good time for the families.
So every Saturday there's a hayride?
Right. Mm-hmm. About 10 to 3.
Oh, my. This is not to be missed.
So, Judy, thanks for being with us today. And I have a question. How did you decide that an orchard and planting things is a commitment? How did you decide to get into apples and berries?
Yeah. I'm going to grow up and be an apple grower?
How did you
what
decide
happened?
That?
It was a real goal of ours to plant an orchard for our retirement years.
And you started really early, didn't you?
Right. And to have a strawberry patch. Those were the two main things we were interested in 50 years ago.
Oh.
Well, it worked out, I guess, right?
We're still there.
Yeah.
So does not exactly plant it all at once. How did you start? How small or how big was your first planting? Do you remember?
I think the orchard was about 10 acres, and I think the strawberries were maybe 5 acres.
So you jumped in there and planted that size at a fell swoop?
Yeah, you just have to get in there and go.
and you started out with mixed varieties in the orchard?
Yes, we were told to plant Jonathan, Gold Delicious, and Red Delicious. Those were the three favorites of Iowans at the time we were told that.
Ah.
Whoa. Well, I'm glad you have other varieties now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We do.
So, yes, tell us about the other varieties that you have because what tastes change. What are people currently asking for?
Well, these are some of the varieties grown at the Berry Patch. Braeburn, Chieftain, Cortland, Jonagold, Honeycrisp, Jonathan, Laura Red, Northern Spy, McCoon,
ooh,
Fireside, and a few others.
Do you think that's enough choices?
I think so. We like it.
Yeah, because not all apples are the same. There's early, there's late. How early, what's your earliest apple, and how soon can people get an early apple?
The earliest one comes at State Fair time in August, and it's called Red Free. There's also another early apple called Williams Pride. And then just a tad later is Paula Red.
Oh, now see, of all those, I have heard of Paula Red. They're early. They kind of take our desire for, oh, I want a fresh apple. And those are the ones you bite into. But those are not necessarily the ones that are
Not keepers, right?
Keeper.
Right.
That's
no,
a word.
No, the
keeper.
Early ones are keeper. Not keepers.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good. Tell me about, you mentioned a variety called Chieftain.
Chieftain is a 100-year-old apple that was introduced by Iowa State University. It's very practical. It is good for baking.
Is this it? She brought us some
yes.
apples to try. I'm going to launch right
into
it.
It's a beautiful red one. It has keeping properties through Christmas right now, if you would
ooh.
Pick some. And I think you would find out that it does whatever you ask it to do.
Oh, what a nice apple.
Right?
So, yeah. And it's delicious. It's crisp. You can bake with these, too,
oh,
I bet.
Yeah. Definitely.
Bake or eat. It has a gorgeous white-ish creamy-colored flesh. It's red with little speckles on it.
Lettuces.
What are those called?
Lettuces.
Lettuces? Mm-hmm. Those are the little speckles? Lettuces. There's a new word for you.
New word for you.
I mean, they're beautiful. They're delicious. I like my apples with a little tartness to them. If they're too sweet or too mushy, I'm like, this is perfect.
Apples can go many different ways. We think of pies. We think of sauce. We think of fresh eating. We think of apple cider, too, which is kind of a whole different family of things that make apple ciders. But some apples cooked down to what we probably would refer to as mush, which is good. That's good for
saucing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then there's apples that kind of hold their own. Judy, you were nice enough to bring, we love it when people bring things to eat because then we can hold things up to the microphone and just let
and
people know
drool,
how
yeah.
good this kitchen is. Donnelly Kitchen does have food. Tell us what you brought for us today, Judy.
Well, I chose an apple crisp made with McCoon apples and a new recipe that I saw with Nilla wafers. And I thought that would be interesting for you to try. So that's what we have.
Oh,
I have
so
to have
too.
Another bit of it here. These McCoons in this apple crisp do this wonderful thing. They do not dissolve. They stay whole. Oh, and they have, first of all, very wonderful flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But in the texture part of the apple crisp, you're not eating applesauce.
Right.
They still have a little toothy feel, not hard. They're perfect.
Oh, good.
These are just great.
This is
bakers.
Lovely. Here is the Nilla apple crisp recipe. Now, Nilla wafers. I like Nilla wafers. They're sweet and they're vanilla-y and they're good. So instead of a pie crust, that's what the Nilla wafers are for. The recipe is 8 cups thinly sliced peeled apples. That's about 4 large. Apples, 2 pounds, 1/2 cup brown sugar, divided, 2 teaspoons ground cinnamon, divided, 1/3 cup old-fashioned or quick cooking oats, 1/4 cup cold margarine, 25 reduced fat Nilla wafers, crushed, about a cup of crumbs, okay? Preheat oven to 350. Toss the apples with the brown sugar and cinnamon and spoon into a baking dish. Combine the oats and brown sugar and cinnamon. Cut in the margarine with a pastry blender or two knives until mixture resembles coarse crumbs. Add wafer crumbs. Mix well. Spread the crumb mixture over the apples. And remember, you've saved some of this crunchy stuff to go on the top, too. There you go. Then you
and she's got this baked
minutes.
In a regular pie pan.
Yeah.
It's good. Just perfect amount for that.
So vanilla crisp, it's a good taste, that vanilla little bit of extra.
It's a classic, but the McCoons really set it apart and make it very special. And McCoon is M-A-C-O-U-N, right?
Right.
Tell us about McCoons. I had never heard of it till I ran across it at your orchard. Tell me about the McCoon apple.
Well, it's a burgundy colored with a little flatness on the bottom.
Yeah, it's very dark.
Yes, and it's a snow white flesh, which a lot of people like, and very mm-hmm. slow to discolor, so that if you put it in your salad, it's not going to turn brown.
Uh-huh.
And I like it in a crisp because, as Donna's already said, it has the right texture.
Holds its shape, yeah.
I like it for a snack apple. It's just the kind I like, so.
McCoon's.
It works.
How nice.
That's interesting that it doesn't turn brown. You know, they have, I suppose you know about this new genetically engineered apple. The only quality that it has that makes it different from an ordinary apple is they've made it so it doesn't turn brown. But here we could have been eating McCoon's all along. We don't have to engineer it. Nature did that for us.
Yeah, I kind of wonder. So after we eat that, do we not turn brown and wrinkly either?
Well, now that's a whole... That would have to go through the
FDA?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It's a medicine then. An anti-aging medicine.
Well, apples are good for you.
That's right.
Anyway.
An apple a day.
Anyway. Like I said, apples have a... People ask for different things. It's like there's different kinds of apples. And one that seems to be all the rage for this year and past few years has been the Honeycrisp. So where in the world did that come from? And is that an old apple? Is that a new apple? What is that?
Well, it's been around at least 20 years, and it was developed by the University of Minnesota. And they did a good job, and they were testing it. And as I remembered the story, they really didn't think it would fly, and they kind of put it on the sideline. And a couple other guys said, we're going to take this to the end, and they went with it. So we're thankful for them. It is one of the best keepers. If you pick it today, you'll have apples through January, at least, in your refrigerator. That's quite important.
Yes. Let's talk about keeping apples. Our eyes tend to be bigger than our stomach this time of year. Oh, boy, apples. And we take them home. We have to know how to keep them. What's a good way to do that?
Okay, the best way... While some apples can be kept in a garage or basement, they will stay fresher longer if they're in a perforated plastic bag that has little holes in it and
right,
stored.
They outgas as they ripen.
Stored in the refrigerator, 35 to 40 degrees. And the mature apples that you pick now in October and kept in the refrigerator can last, like I'm telling you, through Christmas. So that's a good thing, and this is a good time to get yourself a half bushel of freshly picked mature apples.
Mm-hmm.
They have the nutrition, the taste, all of the good fiber and everything you want in an apple right now. They're good right now. They're not picked too green, and they're going to keep better. What you get in some other stores is an apple picked way too early, way green, not a full flavor. So you know what you have if you pick your own.
That is true. And another note about pick your own, there is a term called windfall, which means it's fallen off on the ground. Once an apple gets a bruise on it, it's not so good. You should maybe use that one right away because that little brown spot will make sure that it will not keep until Christmas. Picking your own apples is nice, but it reminds us that, apples can be heavy and apples can be hard to reach. And the people that pick apples and bring them to us or make them available in bags or bushels for us, they're providing a service because being a an apple grower or a strawberry grower, to get that stuff from the field to your plate.
At that, the perfect ripeness.
At the perfect. It is not only a service, it's a lot of hard work. Thank you, Judy, for doing that for us.
At your U-Pick, people can actually, you have some picked already if somebody doesn't want to pick.
They're in storage, and we hopefully have enough through Christmas.
So you can, one can go out there and either you pick and have a lovely time in the orchard, or you can just go out and have at it with the already picked fruit. Now, right now you also, what did you say you had? You still have raspberries?
The red raspberries are beautiful right now, and the gold raspberries are just as nice, and we call them cyclone mix.
Nothing like a good bit of marketing there, Judy. Good for you. Good for you.
Now, what's it like to run a U-Pick for you guys?
Well, it's most months of the year you're open most hours of the day. We do try to leave Sunday for our family activity and church time, and so we do close it on Sunday. But you must be available. You must be willing to have your phone number out there. You must be willing to have your driveway accessible and the trees small enough so they don't need ladders. You can pick from the ground or just use a little picking basket once in a while. You have to think of what the public needs. They need restrooms. They might need coffee. They might need water. They might need the first aid kit for a splinter. They might need to be able to call home, and they've lost their cell phone. They might need to call the man who opens their locked car because they messed that up. So there's lots of little things you think about, whether or not they're permitted to bring their pets along and so forth and so on. So it all plays together.
There's a lot – because people – there's a romance of going to a farm and seeing all this stuff. But there is the reality of working and getting food from a working farm. It doesn't just sort of fly off of the trees and, oh, isn't that cute? By the time you've kind of carried your pail of apples or your – earlier this year, you had a lovely blueberry season. And that was that was something, too, where you see lots of people out in the field. How in the world – it's kind of like controlled grazing, I would think. Yes, I often think of that because I know for a U-pick operation, you kind of want to make sure to steer people to the bushes that need to be picked. So do you have people out there like with flags or pushing them, or how do you tell them where to go?
Well, first of all, there's 12 acres of blueberries to pick, which means we choose early, middle, and late varieties to have an extended season. We like to go out and taste the blueberries and check on their maturity and flavor. Then we will assign a manager when we can to be out there and direct people to park close to the field and to please pick in that field, which we will provide you with a picking pail and general directions. And that really works pretty well. People are really good to come and pick what needs to be picked.
Yes, yes. That works for apples, too, or can people more go? Well, no, apples, too, come at different times.
Exactly. And we try to post a sign in front of apples that are ready to be picked, and we explain that. Look for the sign that says Honeycrisp or Chieftain, and those are ready to pick. If you don't see a sign, you may know that they're not mature yet. They're starchy. They don't have the right taste. They are not colored yet, and the cold weather brings that all into play.
Ah, keeping track of when everything is ready. So here's a question. Now, not everybody's going to pick efficiently and pick an apple tree clean. What happens to the apples that are left on the tree?
Hopefully, if we have enough good weather and enough good customers that want to pick their own, the trees are more or less bare by the end of October. However, we're right now having quite a rainy season, and we've asked our employees to please take a look at them and pick closer. so that we have some extras in case they don't get out to pick right now when it isn't so ideal.
That's right. You're watching the weather. You're watching for the things that come fast and come slow, and be ready, because you can't just, I mean, and apples end up on the ground, too. Those are kind of lost apples.
They are, and people will say, I'm going to pick up apples off the ground. And do you know, on a beautiful, warm day, there's wasps that get right over to that juicy apple, and I'll say, move it with your toe and your foot. Don't go down and pick something. You don't know what's on it, okay?
We don't want
you to get stung.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
It's better to pick them off the trees, please.
Thank you. Good advice. If you're going to go out and pick your own apples, apples are a romantic thing. And I've played, there's a tune that I have played in the past, but I'm not going to play that today. But there's a tune written by Rick Exner, a local musician who writes lovely things. And he wrote a song about apples. It's called the Apple Two-Step, and he kind of has a bit of wisdom about apples, and the chorus has this in it. That whole thing is about apples, picking, choosing, and it sort of has a double meaning for picking and choosing your life mate, too, but this is about apples, and the chorus has these few lines in it. The Cortlands and McIntosh, they ripen much too fast, but the Spies and the Baldwins are keepers by contrast, and it pays. You'll find it's worth waiting for the apple that will last. So those are good words from Rick Exner, and it's nice for him to do that sort of thing. We're going to come back, talk more to Judy Henry about Orchard and Berry Patch in the fall. What's going on there? This is KHOI. This is the Donalana Kitchen, and this is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking to Judy Henry from the Berry Patch. Just east of Ames here, and it is fall, and we're talking about fall things. That was a little bit of music. I try to get seasonal appropriate music, and because of the weather we've been having, that tune was called A Roof for the Rain. Yes, it was. We've been having some very rainy weather. We've got some more apples to talk about.
Yeah, Judy brought us some apples. Wait, what was this one we just ate? I already forgot.
Chieftain.
There we go.
Yay, right, Iowa now. State.
Okay. Oh, right. So that was bred at Iowa State. In what year did you say?
1917. It's over 100 years old, that wonderful apple.
Now, what's this one? This nice
Jonathan.
This is a Jonathan. This is a classic. You don't have a lot of trouble finding these. Ooh, nice white color. Have a little slice, Lana. Mm-hmm. And these are all what's very pickable right now, right?
Yes.
Mmm. Oh, this is really...
I love
not
fall.
Not a bad apple in the bunch, right?
I love fall.
This is really good.
And the yellow one here, oh, beautiful yellow one, that's a Johnna Gold?
No, that's one was an Early Gold.
Early Gold. I don't know why I think
it's
of the...
quite early.
I think of those as good pie apples. But
yes.
That's what people probably ask you, is this a keeper? Is this a pie apple? Is this an eating apple?
It is a good apple sauce apple. When I make sauce, add nothing.
Just
nothing.
The
no sugar, no honey. I just cook apples.
It's very sweet.
And it will have its
soft,
own
yeah.
good flavor. Right. Now, if you're cooking Honeycrisp applesauce, mm-hmm. you will cook it 30 to 40 minutes. And then you will get your potato masher out and give it a little help because it'll be crunchy chunky.
That's right.
And it will not strain out to be real soft apple.
Mm. Well, I like both kinds of applesauce, so it's good to know
I like chunky applesauce, too.
Yeah, it's good, good. Back and forth there.
Hey, as long as the flavor of the apple is good, you're going to get good applesauce some sort. Mm-hmm.
And you can mix them. You can have different mm-hmm. kinds of apples and get pink or get kind of... yellowish look or whatever you like.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And here's one we didn't... What's this one?
Granny Smith.
Oh, yes. It is green.
I picked it early. It usually hangs on the tree the whole month of October. And it is a good keeper for as long as it lasts maybe a couple months in the
They're
fridge.
Nice and tart. They're known for apple pie making. Now, your Granny Smiths, like sometimes you'll get them in the grocery store and they're almost like bright green. This has a lot of yellow to it. It's because it's tree ripened.
Mm. So that's
delicious.
What a ripe Granny Smith tastes
there
like.
You go.
And it really has a couple weeks to go.
It's a good, It's a good opportunity to mention that eating local, eating apples local and other fruit. Well, a lot of fruit doesn't travel very well to start with, but eating apples locally, get some taste in there, folks. These are really, really good.
Yeah, there are so many, many flavors, and it's not even subtle, the differences. Mm-hmm. It's just fabulous.
Here's some facts and figures. You know, this is facts and figures. We like to give you some information. There are over 140 apple orchards in Iowa. And almost all the apples that are produced in Iowa are sold in Iowa. So that's what it says here. But I could see that. People like to buy local. Yes, and even if they're delivered to grocery stores. Buy those apples. And did you know that there are over 2,000 different kinds of apples grown in the United States? Who in the world can keep track of them all? But I suppose every apple has its own ideal place to grow, and probably in other states and other places that they grow apples, they have little niches of places there.
Well, but we do have almost perfect weather for apples here, don't we? Because isn't the cold winter good for apple trees?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But so does China. Mm-hmm. And they are the world's largest producer of apples.
Ah!
We had some Chinese horticulturists visit our farm 2 weeks ago, and one of the gentlemen showed me pictures of his farm where he was growing 400 acres of Fuji apples. I was amazed.
Kind. Oh, my goodness.
Think of the acreage they have. And he showed me a picture, and they looked beautiful.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
but
my
that's
goodness.
All one variety.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
We can go to the berry patch and just have so many varieties. And to make sure everybody knows how to find the berry patch.
Yeah.
So from Ames, you take 30 east, and there is a sign right on the road that points to where you turn off to go to the berry patch. So you're kind of just due south of Nevada, basically.
Right. It's called Southwest 3rd Street, and it's named S14, and it farther down the road, it's named 620, but you will find it if you follow the direction.
Just go south on that road. Yes.
Yeah. So on 30, when you're going east, there is a little, and this is a state highway sign that says berry patch.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very good.
It's well marked.
Very good. You mentioned events, and this is fall. People like to come out and not only you pick, but kind of take in your farm just as a nice place to be. You mentioned you had, often you have music on your farm. Who's been there?
We've invited Rick Exner and Billy
Kearney
to come out, and they brought their guitar and violin and played music for 3-4 hours. It was delightful.
That sounds like
right
those
in
guys.
The orchard.
Right on the porch of the sales room, so most people could see them and hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And we did use their good talents for our fall cruise. We call it Farm Cruise, and it was September 8. And people will come out, take a tour on the hay rack, and see what we have to offer to pick and what's growing out there.
Speaking about what's growing, not everything is just out in your many, many orchards and berry fields, but there's been some work on greenhouses there. What's in your greenhouses now?
Right now, the red raspberries are in the greenhouses, and we pick those about every 2 days. And one of them is heated with wood that we cut from the woods of our farm.
Well, and this is Dean, your husband, he's done some rather ingenious things. So there's a big wood-burning little building, actually, and you use the apple parts. But then he's got these tunnels running from the wood burner, and one goes to heat the house, right? And the other one goes to heat the greenhouse. And when I first moved back to Iowa, which was about 10 or 12 years ago, we did not have much growing in the winter.
Right.
And Dean got these hoop houses going, and he trained Lee from Lee's Greens, and that started giving us greens all year round. And I have to say, I can remember when Judy brought the first bags of greens to Farm to Folk, and she said, I don't know how much to charge for these. And I was so happy to see them. I said, you be sure to charge whatever you need to make sure you can keep on doing this. Because to be able to buy, like, what Lee does, little chards and what else?
Spinach.
Kale, spinach. All winter long, he does a lot of sprouts. And so to be able to buy this fresh picked stuff in the middle of winter and not to have to rely on the California greens that have traveled all across the country and sometimes have recalls because of odious things that might have gotten on them in large productions. We don't have those problems in the scale that it's grown here locally. And so, I want to credit Dean and Judy for starting the next generation of farmers. And it's wonderful to have Lee's Greens. And he always says, I learned everything I know from Dean and Judy. That's what he said. He told me that.
That's a good start.
He told me that.
No, actually, that's one of the important things that farmers can do is plant the seeds of new farmers. So advice and sharing things is wonderful. And you've got lots of years, like as you said, of if we learn from our mistakes, we all get better. So there you go.
There's one apple we didn't taste. What's this one,
there's
Judy?
One we haven't bitten.
Oh, you know the taste of that one. It's most people's favorite.
Oh, this is
crisp.
This is,
yay.
Okay, I have to say, it's not necessarily my favorite because they're ubiquitous.
Well, that's because you like to be different. Honeycrisp.
Okay, this is a good one.
Honeycrisp are large, and I like that. I mean, if you're going to be making a pie, mm-hmm. go with a large one. That's very good.
And Why, Judy, do you think of all the apple varieties, used to be Golden Delicious, now it's Honeycrisp. Why do you think it's so exceedingly popular?
Because of the crunch. And the young children really enjoy that juicy flavor. I was watching a young child at the berry patch, and she had a huge Honeycrisp, and she just had like a little trail right around it. She was just enjoying all that juice, and it's just amazing.
It runs down
how
her
much
arm,
they enjoy
right.
them. Yeah,
very good. And it is. It's kind of the favorite now, and that's good to have a favorite apple. It's. I'm so glad they don't all taste the same.
And didn't you mention also that the produce buyers love the Honeycrisp because it has a very long shelf life? I would imagine that had something to do with it being so widely promoted.
Very
good. Convenient for the marketers.
Right. Very good. Well, we love apples, and we love apples that are grown locally, and they taste so good locally. Do you have a website or some, if we want more information?
Right. The website is info@berrypatchfarm.com.
There.
And you must also know about Farm to Folk. And maybe you'd like to tell them
a few things about that, where they can get things. CSA. That's a community-supported agriculture. Judy and Dean's apples from Berry Patch Farm are available there, plus stuff from all over. The Farm to
plus
Folk is,
Lee's greens.
Is kind of a unique thing because it's not just one farmer. Often is a provides lots of things. These are lots of farmers producing lots of things. So check out farmtofolk.com. And, yes, you can buy fresh food, local food, fresh food. It's all good.
All year round.
All year round. Thank you for being with us today, Judy.
Oh, it was delightful. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, very good.
And the apple crisp.
So, Donna, I hear you've been making lots of biscotti lately.
Oh, it's my biscotti week. So the Sustainable Ag Club at ISU is having on Saturday at Alluvial a fundraiser where they have different chefs around town making dishes, and you go out and apparently you buy a little ticket and then you sample from all of these people. And I volunteered to make 400 biscotti, and it's supposed to be all local foods, right? So what I put in my biscotti, early morning harvest wheat, which is from Panora, some local eggs from Tom Wilson, and the crowning glory of it is the black walnuts.
Mm.
So the walnuts that grow around here are all black walnuts. Now, if you don't know the difference between a black walnut and a regular walnut, which is also called an English walnut, you better try, because you can really, they look kind of the same, more or less. The black walnuts are a little bit darker once you've shelled them, but the flavor is distinctly different. The black walnuts, which are something that I grew up with, maybe they're a bit of an acquired taste.
People find them, well, assertive, strong. But, oh, here's a black walnut ice cream or black walnut put in a crisp. Oh, my goodness.
Mm. Well, I find that if people think they don't like black walnuts, I put it with chocolate. Because with chocolate, it works. So these are black walnut chocolate chip biscottis. And this is Saturday out at Alluvial at around 5 or 6 o'clock, I think. Something like that.
It's the Alluvial Brewing Company, which is north of Ames.
Yeah, and that out is by also Prairie Moon.
Also called the Prairie Moon Winery. There's kind of a dual thing going on up there. And it'll be good. It's good to find out about what local chefs, and more local chefs, are buying local food and making local food. And we enjoy in fall. What a good time. What a good time. Also, I had the opportunity to taste some of, well, see, one nice thing about knowing Donna is she does trial batches of things. So I got some biscotti last week.
Mm.
Now, that wasn't the walnut and chocolate one. But it has some of Donna's that one had some of Donna's signature black pepper in it, and I like that.
Oh, yeah, I put black pepper in almost all my desserts.
Yes, but anyway, that was good. Now, who would have thought that biscotti would be popular? Because basically, it's just this dried-out thing. But, oh, is it good? It is good. You know, it's good. It's like especially with coffee or some tea, very good. And thinking of things in the future here, for those who've never made biscotti, Donna is going to team up with a local store here in downtown Ames called Cook's Emporium. And they have classes.
And they do.
Now, biscotti is one of those things that, well, it's simple. I mean, the ingredients are there. But it helps to watch somebody make it because it's a touchy-feely thing.
The whole trick with biscotti, because you can, and I'll tell you what the basic recipe is, but the trick is, you know, different flours absorb liquids in different ways. So the trick is when you make the biscotti batter, you kind of have to know what it's supposed to look like. Because if it's too dry, they get really hard. If it's too wet, they like ooze and spread all over. So in early December, and we will talk about it closer to the time, I'm going to teach a biscotti, I think it's on a Saturday morning in early December, a biscotti class at Cook's Emporium. Mindy and I got it on the schedule. And we'll have Mindy on the show. And we're kind of, Lana and I always do this, we kind of do, what can you make for Christmas presents for people? You know, fudge, truffles, cookies, biscotti. It is gift-giving time, and I think nothing is more fun than making all of your Christmas presents in the kitchen. So biscotti are particularly good for that because, first of all, you can stick them in the mail, and almost nothing can happen to them, right? if you just wrap them properly, you can send them to Aunt Elsie in Missouri or, you know, anybody that you want, and they do well in the mail. They also can be made in advance well enough because they're very good keepers.
Do you put them in the freezer or do you just put them on in a...
Well, it depends on how much in advance. I mean, you know, a week or two, they will... Like, I have a really tight old-fashioned tin bread box, and I can keep them in there for quite a long time.
Uh-huh.
You can also just put them in a plastic bag. The other thing you can do is if it's very moist like it is right now, you just put them back in the oven, turn it on low for a few minutes, and they will crisp right up again.
Oh, that's right. You can re-crisp. Very
that's
good.
Right. Huh. Very because good. A biscotti is basically a twice-baked cookie.
That's a good word for
it. Yeah, because you mix the batter, you make a little log with it, you put it in the oven and you bake it till it's, you know, firm to tap, tap, tap. Then you take it out and you slice it and you lay all the slices out on the pan and then you stick it back in the oven. Now, okay, I have to give you the recipe, all right? Very quickly. It's really simple. This makes about 30-ish plus. So the basic recipe is 2 eggs and 1 cup of sugar. And then you add your flavorings there, like for this chocolate chip black walnut biscotti. Then I put in a little coriander, some black pepper, some Ceylon cinnamon, and I put in just a splash of espresso coffee. Not too much, because you don't want too much liquid. Then you add 2 cups of flour. Now, I use whole wheat pastry flour, not bread flour. You cannot use bread flour in cookies. You won't like it, I promise you. But I do use whole wheat pastry flour. Now, if you're using white flour gets a little bit gummier. So this is where looking at the texture, you kind of have to watch how moldable it is. So then with the flour, I put in 1/2 teaspoon of soda, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder. Mix it all up. Then I throw in about 1 cup of black walnut pieces and 1 cup of chocolate chips. Garble it all together, put it on either a greased... Now, you notice this recipe has no fat in it. I do call this my... Okay, here's how I developed this recipe. Michelle Pfeiffer was my client, and she said, oh, I want some biscotti with no fat. I'm going, ooh, I've never made biscotti. I mean, I didn't tell her that. I ran out and figured out how to do it. But for years, we made different flavors of these biscotti because it didn't have any fat in it. except, of course, what's in the nuts or something like that. So this is a non-fat biscotti recipe, and you just spread it out in a loaf. Well, here's the little trick. I use you have to lightly grease the pan or else use a Silpat or something like that, which is a silicone baking sheet. So I dump it onto the greased cookie sheet, and then I get my hands wet. And then you can easily handle the dough and form it into the log, kind of the length of the pan. So then you bake it at 350 until you can tap it and it's not mushy. And then you take it out and you slice it. Now, at that point, I turn the oven off and it's still warm. But I put the sliced cookies back into the still warm oven until they're dried out. Now, there are lots of fancy recipes that say, oh, you know, you reduce it to 250 and then you turn them over. I don't do any of that. You just put them in and they finish off like that.
Ah.
Couldn't be simpler.
Ah, biscotti, mm-hmm. biscotti. Mm-hmm. This is KHOI, this is Community Radio, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. Let's take a little break here and celebrate the fall weather with a waltz. This is called Autumn in Paris. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We talked earlier about farmers being generous and planting the seeds of new farmers. And there's many young people that want to be farmers. Donna's going to be in an event put on by the Sustainable Ag students at ISU. There are people that are actually interested in doing this. It's hard work, but they're interested in doing this. Thinking of the people that want to be farmers, I'm going to share a reading here with you. These are some lovely words from a book called Letters to a Young Farmer, and this is an excerpt from an essay by author Barbara Kingsolver. She says that she invests her hope in these exceptional souls. And here's are her words and her advice to a young farmer. I don't need to tell you what there is to love in this life. You've chosen it. Maybe you've even had to defend that choice already against family or academic advisors who don't see the future in farming. Clearly, you do. You're moved by the daily rewards. You like early rising. You can't wait to get outside, cup of coffee in hand. Walk among the seeded rows. Take stock of the new lives that have risen to meet the day. You stay late in the barn with a ewe giving birth. You slog through a deep February snow to enter the summer hoop house and inhale a humid blast of kale-scented oxygen and smile like a fox, knowing that you've mastered time travel here, at least on a modest vegetable scale. I expect you know you'll have to navigate many kinds of relationships. It's tempting to think of farming as a hermitage, and it's true you'll sink deeply into one place, but you'll have a stormy long-term relationships with a troop of deer or a dynasty of groundhogs. You're going to need a good dog. But your life will be full of people, too, and sometimes so many as to drive you a little crazy as you foster your own interns who come to you with uninformed agrarian ideals. Traditional farms pass down through generations, but you'll have to look for mentors. At this point in history, that's where you're going to get your advice. It will be up to you to find your farming family. People who can teach you how to make smart choices and forgive your mistakes. Probably goes without saying you'll need to study. Keep good records. Keep your eyes open. Respect the complexities of your profession. It's a bold business in which you will partner with your ecosystem and everyday acts of creation. People have been doing this for as long as we've called ourselves civilized, but that doesn't mean it's easy. That means your profession has a history, a philosophy, a body of science, and a whole library of accumulated wisdom. As the world changes, you'll have to learn to adjust, not just to the old ways, but to the new ones, how to cope with new kinds of droughts and floods, and the critical importance of sequestering carbon and grass finishing your livestock. I hope you didn't choose this job because you disliked school. You're still a student. Your homework will never end. In exchange for your efforts, we, your customers, will learn to respect the art and science of your work. We'll be grateful for your courage and your vision. Prepare to rectify one of the most ridiculous, sustained oversights in all of human existence. When we told our youth that farming was a lowly aim compared with becoming teachers, doctors, or lawyers, what were we thinking? We need teachers for just a few of life's decades. If we're lucky, we'll see a doctor only a few times a year and a lawyer even less. But we need farmers every single day of our lives, beginning to end, no exceptions. We forgot about that for a while, and the price was immense. Slowly, we're coming back to our senses. Be patient with us. We need you. That was a little excerpt from an essay by Barbara Kingsolver, the author, from a book called Letters to a Young Farmer on Food Farming and Our Future, put out by the Stone Barn Center for Food and Agriculture. It has a lot of wise and lovely people writing letters to young farmers. Good thoughts.
And I, since I'm here with two of our local longtime farmers, I want to do take this time to thank you guys, both Judy Henry and Lana Nachtigall, for growing food here in Ames and for teaching lots of other people how to grow food.
Well, I've been learning all along, and I do like to let people know and help people along, and it's a good thing to do. Yes, it is. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thanks to Judy Henry for joining us at our kitchen table today. We talked about her farm. She farms with her husband, Dean, at the Berry Patch, east of Ames. And Donna waxed eloquent about biscotti. Thank you, Donna. Oh, yes. And we shared a little bit of wisdom, Letter to a Young Farmer, by Barbara Kingsolver. Apples. Apples are a wonderful thing. We've had music by the band Greenfire, Ken Kolodner, and Laura Risk, Hammer Dulcimer, and Fiddle. Yes. Listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen live, Tuesdays at noon, repeated Tuesday evening at 7, or anytime at khoifm.org. You can find out more about our station there. You can find, if you can't get enough of us, there's recipes, there's archives. My goodness, you can go to the Donna Lana Kitchen and listen
to
us again.
Right, if you forgot how to do some recipe, it's probably in the archives. You can go back in and play it over while you're cooking.
Bet. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Nachtigall.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.